Hi, this is Ruth McCauley with news from the Decatur area for Thursday, April 28th. We begin with a front page article from the Herald and Review written by Allison Petty, an H&R staff writer. Park District City still in sync on lakefront. Much has changed since Decatur City Council members and Decatur Park District commissioners last discussed their vision for Nelson Park lakefront development. Some aspects of the plans they discussed in January 2011 have become reality. Others seem more distant, and some elements of the project remain just out of reach, dependent on state grant funding that has been suspended. The leaders of both governing bodies met Wednesday at Scoville Golf Course banquet facility to take stock of the issue. While some questions remain, it was clear that both groups want to continue to work together on the lakefront. I really think this is a new beginning, kind of a phase two, Mayor Julie Moore Wolf said. We don't have clear direction tonight, but this is the beginning of dialogue. Consultant Greg Wakamp of Edgewater Resources walked the members through the initial plan and what they have accomplished. The review was especially important because the composition of both boards has changed in the last 5 years. Tim Gleason began as city manager in March 2015. Council members Bill Faber, Chris Funk, Lisa Gregory, and Pat McDaniel, as well as commissioners Chris Harrison and Stacy Young, have taken office since then. Gleason said he was surprised to find that the city had spent nearly $1.3 million on the project over several years, even as it dealt with the aftermath of the recession. The city's contributions have been toward elements near the shoreline, such as the docks and promenade. It became very obvious to me that this is a priority of the elected officials. Their vision to develop that lakefront is a priority, Gleason said. Some of the achievements have included Overlook Adventure Miniature Golf and its two adjacent restaurants, new docks, and a promenade in front of the Beach House restaurant, an accessible fishing pier, and a walking path. One central question has not been answered in 5 years. What is going to happen to boat docks on Lake Decatur? City and park leaders have been clear in their message that the docks need to adhere to more consistent standards, but they have not defined what those standards are. The docks also need to comply with the Americans with Disabilities Act, which could require expensive renovations. Wakamp said the most cost-effective way to remedy the situation would be to build new docks that would be controlled by one operator, though boat clubs could continue to exist. The money for construction could come from bonds that would be repaid with revenue from boat slip rental. You're essentially looking at a situation where the marinas will fund themselves, Wakamp told the boards. And that sounds crazy, but time after time I can show you marina after marina in public ownership where that works. He suggested that the district and city explore creation of a transition plan to determine the path forward. Members of both bodies indicated that they wanted to prioritize finding a solution. Park district leaders also clarified that they are seeking approval to move ahead on some projects without the state grants for which they had qualified. The district was promised state funding for projects including batting cages and a ropes course near the miniature golf facility. It also appears that an additional grant promised by former Governor Pat Quinn, intended to help with construction of a large amphitheater, never received formal approval. The grants were suspended after Governor Bruce Rauner took office and budget battles descended on Springfield. Several commissioners have said they would favor moving ahead with at least some elements of the work. But the district could be kept from receiving future grants if it proceeds without a grant it had been awarded. Commissioner Chris Riley said the district sent a letter to the Illinois Department of Natural Resources last week to ask for a waiver. Two residents also questioned the Park Board's July 2011 vote to close Lakeshore Drive. Park leaders have said the scenic, winding road through Nelson Park attracted many drivers who exceeded the speed limit, and it also conflicted with the lakefront plans. Bob Brilley II, vice president of the park board, attempted to put the matter to rest. He said he used to take the road often and does not like that it is closed, but he voted to do so for safety reasons and to allow the district to move forward. I can say this, the road will not open again, and I'm going to be honest with you, I'm an honest person. Unless this board changes, Brilley said, that's just the way it is. Our next article from the Decatur Herald and Review was written by Ryan Voiles, who's also an H&R staff writer. Foreclosures after May 2nd to be eligible for mediation. All matters of residential mortgage foreclosure after May 2nd will be eligible for mediation under Macon County's new program. The mediation program, which was approved for use earlier this month by the Illinois Supreme Court, would require the lender and the borrower in a foreclosure case to meet with a mediator who would explore ways the borrower's mortgage loan could be reworked or reinstated. If mediation is unsuccessful, the case would then proceed to circuit court for foreclosure. Mediation will be handled in conjunction with the Macon County Circuit Court and the Community Preservation Clinic of the University of Illinois College of Law. Additionally, the Community Investment Corporation of Decatur Incorporated will participate in the pre-mediation conference by reviewing borrower documentation to determine workout options, assess a borrower's budget, develop a financial plan, and to submit loss mitigation applications to lenders. The plan for the program, which is already set up in places such as Champaign County, is to reduce the burden of expenses sustained by lenders, borrowers, and taxpayers as a result of residential foreclosures. In addition, the program will lessen the stress placed on the circuit court by reducing the number of court cases, said Presiding Judge A.G. Weber. The program that Weber will supervise has an annual cost of $27,000, which is split between a $15,000 grant from the Illinois Attorney General's office and $12,000 raised through a $75 filing fee to be placed on all residential foreclosure cases. Officials have begun the process of recruiting and training mediators, with mediation expected to begin by late June or early July. Our next article was written by Justin Kahn, who's an H&R staff writer. Jones delivers positive message to YMCA. Sonia Jones's message at the Decatur Family YMCA's 139th annual meeting was, "You're irreplaceable." Jones, runner-up on season 16 of the NBC show The Biggest Loser, told the audience at the Decatur Club that individuals often allow what they do for people to overshadow what they are to people. "I always hear people say they wish they had one more moment with a loved one who's passed," Jones said. "Is that because they wanted them to have cooked dinner one more time? No, they want to hug them and tell them they love them one more time." Jones is a former PE teacher and youth coach who is now an outreach representative for Hospital Sisters Health System, which includes St. Mary's Hospital. Jones said since competing on the TV show, she's learned the power of a microphone and a positive message. Jones, 39, of Springfield, was a semi-pro softball player whose weight had risen to 283 pounds when she auditioned for the show. She was chosen as one of 20 contestants out of the 88,000 who applied. "I was the funny, happy, go-to girl. I was stinking hilarious," Jones said, "but it was a facade. I was a broken mess. I was laughing, so I didn't cry." The competition brought out the best in Jones, who lost 144 pounds and finished 1 pound behind the winner. A year and a half later, Jones has kept the weight off. She called her experience the hardest and greatest thing I've ever done. "I shrunk physically, but I grew physically, spiritually, and emotionally. I'm still a mess, but I'm a much happier mess," she said. She finished by telling the audience, "If you remember anything from this night, remember this random lady telling you, you're stronger than you know, you're better than you believe, and no one can replace you." The YMCA also named Jeannie Ramsey its Member of the Year. David McDaniel was Volunteer Coach of the Year. Nancy Buckles won the Staff Spirit Award. Chastity Casey won the Staff Customer Service Award. And Caitlin Spangler won the Staff Rising Star Award. Kendall Briscoe and Robert Kistenfeger were... Kistenfeger, it's K, no, I'm sorry, there's no R, Kistenfeger, Kistenfeger, were recognized as outgoing members of the YMC Board of Directors. Mount Zion's Morgan Engman and LSA's Craig Austin were the Petrowski Soccer Scholarship winners. Board Vice President Darby Brinkutter highlighted the Y's 2015 accomplishments, including opening a new youth fitness center, starting the Active Tracks program, and increasing the numbers involved in swim lessons and the swim team. She also spoke about 2016 initiatives, including the Move and Thrive weight management program, the Live Strong program for adults with cancer, the Mike McElroy Memorial Golf Outing, the youth soccer program's move to BorgWarner, and upgrades to the locker rooms and fitness center. We're going to hit some of the less savory news from crime and courts. This article written by Huey Freeman is their crime reporter for the Herald-Tribune Review. Recent murder defendant, three others, charged in home invasion. Nearly 2 years after Bryson Harden was acquitted of first-degree murder, he is facing felony charges in connection with a robbery of a man who was lured to a woman's apartment. Another man and two women have been charged with identical crimes. At about 11 p.m. on April 9th, a 38-year-old man was visiting 23-year-old Jasmine M. Evans when three men walked into her apartment in the 500 block of West Decatur Street. Two of the men began hitting the 38-year-old man and yelling at him, "Get naked now, and I need everything you got," the victim told police in an affidavit by a Decatur patrol officer. A man later identified as Joseph G. Stolle hit the victim in the back of his head with a pistol and punched him in the face. As the victim tried to get away, Stolle, 23, kicked him in the face and said, "I'm going to put a hole in your head." The victim handed his wallet to Harden, as well as $1,400 and his cell phone. The victim told police the suspects drove away in a black Lincoln Town Car. About 5 minutes later, officers conducted a traffic stop on the vehicle at East Main and North Water Streets. Harden and the third suspect, who has not been charged, were in the vehicle. The victim identified them as two of those who had been in the apartment. Police found Harden with $1,345. The victim's wallet was found within a block of the crime scene. In a police interview, Jasmine Evans admitted that she invited the victim over to her apartment and then came up with a plan with Harden, Felicia L. Mosley, 24, and Stolle, Mosley's boyfriend, to take the victim's money once he arrived at the residence. The other man, who walked in with Stolle and Harden, was not a part of the plan, Evans told police. She said her plan was to get some money from the victim, and then the men would come inside and pretend they were her boyfriend. She didn't want him to get hurt, but just wanted to get his money. The defendants had their preliminary hearings Wednesday. Harden's hearing on charges included armed robbery and home invasion was continued to May 11th. The other defendants entered not guilty pleas and are due in court for pretrial hearings May 24th or 25th. In a brief unattributed item on the local page, a cell phone thief tracked, a Decatur woman and police used a phone app to track down her son's stolen cell phone and the 14-year-old who allegedly took it. Police reports say the woman's 18-year-old son, a student at Eisenhower High School, was accosted from behind by the robber about 4 p.m. Monday after he had gotten off the school bus and was walking in an alley behind the 800 block of West Grand Avenue. The robber put him in a chokehold, cutting his face, before grabbing the iPhone and fleeing. The victim's mother, who had flagged down a patrol car to report the crime, later tracked the phone using the app, and police arrested the suspect, who is being held in a juvenile detention center in Peoria and will face a robbery charge. Here's a bit of business news that affects people in the Decatur area, perhaps. It, written by Tony Reed, an H&R staff writer, this out of Atlanta. Mueller Company's solid earnings continue. The Mueller Company division of Mueller Water Products Incorporated, which has factory and foundry operations in Decatur, continues to surf a rising tide of profitability. Second quarter fiscal year results announced Wednesday showed Mueller Company with adjusted operating income up 9% to $35.3 million compared to $32.4 million in the 2015 second quarter. Its operating margin, revenue remaining after wages and other production costs, surged more than 19%, up from the 18.3% achieved this time last year. Orders for the division's valves, hydrants, and other water infrastructure products climbed, with net sales for the latest quarter hitting $182.2 million, up $5 million compared to the second quarter of 2015. Mueller Company's flood of cash helped drive overall Mueller Water Products Incorporated adjusted net income, which is income minus major expenses, to $16.3 million for the latest quarter. That works out at 10 cents a share and a healthy 28% rise over the adjusted net income of $12.7 million, worth 8 cents a share, Mueller Water Products made at this time a year ago. Those earnings per share numbers beat Wall Street expectations by a penny a share. But Mueller Water Products' net sales number of $283.6 million, waterlogged by a poorer performance in other company segments, was off 2% from the 2015 second quarter net sales and missed street estimates by $8.3 million. The company's chairman, president, and CEO, Gregory E. Hyland, said that overall the numbers had been what his management team expected, and he remained bullish about prospects for the rest of the year, especially for the Mueller Company division. Municipal spending and residential construction, our principal end markets, remain solid, said Hyland. We expect them to drive growth in excess of 10% in domestic shipment of valves, hydrants, and brass products in the third quarter. We expect Mueller Company's overall net sales percentage growth in the third quarter to be in the mid to high single digits year over year. Mueller Water Products already plans to spread some around of its growing liquidity among shareholders, announcing in March it was upping the quarterly dividend to 3 cents a share. Mueller Water Products share price closed at $10.84 on Wednesday, up 27 cents. Still continuing with news from the Decatur Herald and Review, we turn back to a government and politics column article with the headline, Business Group Urges More State Aid for Science Ed. This is an article written by Dan Petrella, who is the H&R Springfield Bureau Chief. A group of business leaders is calling on Illinois to invest more in early childhood education to address a widening gap between the number of available jobs related to science, technology, engineering, and math, and the number of applicants qualified to fill them. Ready Nation, a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization of 1,400 business leaders, including 130 in Illinois, says the state is expected to add 100,000 jobs in the so-called STEM fields and in healthcare by the end of the decade. But during the same decade, employers are expecting to have 150,000 job openings in these fields and others that Illinois workers aren't properly trained to fill. One of the keys to preparing students for careers in these high-paying fields is laying the groundwork for math and science education early on, group members said Wednesday at a State House news conference. Today's rocket scientists started as yesterday's inquisitive toddlers, playing with Star Wars toys and using their imagination, said Rudy Valdez, vice president of Rockford Economic Development Organization, Southwest Ideas for Today and Tomorrow. We need to encourage those young imaginations and stoke their developing creativity further. We need to ensure more kids have access to early science and math programs even before they hit kindergarten, said the former executive at UTC Aerospace Systems. Janet Mathis, president and CEO of Renew Moline, an economic development corporation in the Quad Cities, said it's never too early to start teaching kids about these subjects. If kids fall behind before they reach kindergarten, it can be very difficult to catch up, she said. Even in their first years of life, kids can get a very important grounding in such hard skills as math and science, skills they can build on throughout their lives, but they need help and educational stimulation to get there, Mathis said. That's where high-quality preschool and similar programs come in. While Illinois was once a leader in early childhood education, the group says, cuts that began in 2009 have resulted in the loss of more than 20,000 state-supported preschool slots, and this year's budget impasse has worsened the problem by cutting off funding for programs that coach parents of at-risk infants and toddlers. Against that backdrop, Ready Nation is backing Bruce Governor Rauner's proposal to spend an additional $75 million next year on early childhood education, which would bring total spending up to $394 million. The group is also calling on lawmakers and the governor to fully fund social service programs that support young children and their families. The way the state funds education has become one of the highest profile issues at the Capitol as the Democratic-controlled General Assembly and the Republican governor try to work out a compromise for the budget year that ends June 30th and the one that begins July 1. Rauner has called for an increase in spending on early childhood, elementary, and secondary education, but many Democrats, particularly in the Senate, are wary of putting more money into the current funding formula, which they contend fails to get enough state dollars to the districts that need them the most, those with high poverty rates and low property values. Speaking earlier Wednesday at Auburn High School south of Springfield, Rauner said he's willing to negotiate on any subject other than providing more state support for schools. The number one priority for the taxpayer dollar should be to go to our schools no matter what, Rauner said. Whatever else happens with the budget, we should put more money into our school system. The governor says he favors a grand compromise on both years' budgets and is optimistic that one can be reached before the legislature's scheduled adjournment at the end of May. While he hopes the funding formula can be addressed as part of that compromise, quote, "We shouldn't hold up schools opening or more money in total while this is argued," he said, end quote. Sean Noble, Illinois State Director for Ready Nation, said the group isn't backing a specific funding proposal, but in general supports efforts to bring the bottom up. A quick note about some events coming up this weekend. A children's celebration of art and community will be held from 12:30 to 4:30 p.m. on Saturday, April 30th, in Millikan University's Kirkland Fine Arts Center. The event is open to all Illinois children pre-kindergarten through 12th grade, with an assortment of workshops in literature, performing arts, music, and visual arts. Adults may participate with their child or as an observer. Co-sponsors are Millikan University and Illinois PTA. For more information, go to www.illinoispta.org or email spotlight@illinoispta.org. And tickets are still available for the Stratus Foods 2016 Casas for Casa Playhouse Raffle. A food truck playhouse and Victorian playhouse displayed at Hickory Point Mall in Forsyth will be awarded through a drawing at the mall at 4 p.m. Saturday, April 30th. Tickets are $5, $10 for 3, $25 for 10, $50 for 20, and $100 for 50, and are available at the MaconCountyCasa.org and at the Macon County Court Appointed Special Advocate's Office at 132 South Water Street, Suite 250. Also, Trump Direct, 1591 North Water Street, and Land of Lincoln Credit Union, 2890 North Oakland Avenue. For more information about this fundraiser for CASA, the Court Appointed Special Advocacy Program, call 217-428-8424. We don't have time for this full article from the Tribune, but real quickly, on Saturday, April 30th, from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., the Decatur Police Department and the Drug Enforcement Administration, DEA, will give the public its 11th opportunity in 6 years to prevent pill abuse and theft by ridding their homes of potentially dangerous, expired, unused, and unwanted prescription drugs. Bring your pills for disposal to the Decatur Police Department at 707 Southside Drive, West Southside Drive in Decatur, across from the WAND news station. The DEA cannot accept liquids, needles, or sharps. Therefore, only pills or patches will be accepted during this event. The service is free and anonymous, with no questions asked. The event will be a drive-through drop-off process where officers will collect your unwanted medications at your car. Okay, that's pretty good. For more information about the disposal of prescription drugs or about the April 30th Take Back Day event, contact the Professional Standard Unit of the Decatur Police Department at 217-424-2743. Okay, we've reached the end of our time for the first half hour of news from the Decatur area. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be right back. So I hope you'll stick with us.